welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide current educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children, and by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. I'm here with William Federer, and you are the author of more than 20 books, and you've been speaking in more than 100 cities a year. William Federer is a best-selling author and national speaker. His book, America's God and Country, Encyclopedia of Quotations, has sold more than 500,000 copies. His daily radio feature, American Minute, and popular television program, Faith and History, broadcast nationally. And today we're going to talk about your book, The Treacherous World of the 16th Century and How the Pilgrims Escaped It. This is a prequel to America's Freedom. So, first of all, tell my authors what prequel means.
Well, Star Wars, right? You had the episodes, and then you had new episodes that actually were supposed to be before the episodes. So this is before the Revolutionary War. This is what happened that brought the Pilgrims over here in the first place, and it is the seeds of our freedom. For example, in England, in Europe, you had to believe what the king said, right? So all of Western Europe was Catholic. Eastern Europe was Eastern Orthodox, but Western Europe was Catholic. So you had to believe, right, the way that the Catholic king. Well, when the Reformation happened, each king got to decide what's going to be believed in his kingdom. It was actually an interesting little set of circumstances. The Muslims surrounded Vienna, Austria with 100,000 soldiers under Suleiman the Magnificent. And the Reformation had just started 12 years earlier with Martin Luther in 1517. So the Catholic Holy Roman Emperor, Charles V, is faced with a double dilemma. Protestant Reformation on one hand, Muslim invasion on the other hand. So he decides to strike a deal with the Protestants. It's called the Peace of Augsburg of 1555. And in this Peace of Augsburg is a little Latin phrase that had a huge repercussion. The phrase was, cuius regio ius religio, which means whose is the reign, his is the religion. In other words, look, Protestant king, believe whatever you want in your kingdom. Let's just work together against these Muslims who are invading Europe because they want to kill us all. Well, it worked, but it started a domino effect in the next century where different kings believed different things. Mm-hmm. So Northern Germany and Sweden were Lutheran. Switzerland, Calvinist. Italy, Spain, France, Austria, Poland remained Catholic. Scotland was Presbyterian. Holland was Dutch Reformed. And England was Anglican. And so if you didn't believe the way that the king did, you were persecuted, you fled. And so what happened in England? Henry VIII decides that he wants to bring the Reformation to England, but he didn't do it for a spiritual reason. He just wanted another wife.
Oh.
And he ended up having six wives, right? Their fates were divorced, beheaded, died, divorced, beheaded, survived. And the Pope wouldn't recognize his divorce, and so that was his motivation to break from Rome. Mm. His advisors suggested to him, if he really wanted to go through with breaking from Rome, he should stop using that old Latin Bible. Get himself an English Bible, right? Martin Luther translated the Bible into German, and that helped these German princes to break away from Rome. You need an English Bible. Well, it just so happens 3 years earlier, Henry VIII had William Tyndale burnt at the stake for translating the Bible into English. William Tyndale's last words were, Lord, open the King of England's eyes. So this is 3 years later. He decides to do this divorce. His advisors say, well, you need an English Bible. So he basically takes William Tyndale's work and turns it into the Great Bible. And the front page has this engraving of Henry on his throne, giving the Bible to the noblemen and the bishops. And they're all like praising him as this really super cool guy. And so he likes it. He spreads the English Bible all around England. But something unexpected happened. People began to read it and began to compare what's in this Bible to this king divorcing and beheading his wives and claiming to be the head of Christ's church. And so a group started that wanted to purify the Church of England. They were nicknamed Puritans. And then a whole bunch of other little groups were starting off. And the king's like, wait a second. Yes, you can read the Bible in English, but no, you can't do whatever you want. And he passes an act of uniformity. Mm. Everybody has to believe exactly the way he says. He even had the English prayer book. You want to pray a prayer? You got to pray the prayer that's in the book. And so what happened was, if you didn't, you would be arrested and drugged before the Star Chamber. And this was this private room, and the ceiling had stars on it. So that's how it got its name. And there were no, you didn't confront your accuser. You didn't have a lawyer there. It was just you, and they would twist your arm, and they would break your arm, and they would brand you on the face as a heretic, and they would cut off your ears and cut your nose in half and torture you until you confessed. To what? To having five people together in your house talking religious stuff without an Anglican minister there. Mm. That was a crime. Or if you were a dissenting pastor, you could not preach within 5 miles of a city. Mm. Right? So the king was wanting to have this act of uniformity, sort of like today, where you have the government wanting to infringe on people's consciences, forcing little nuns to have to support abortion. I mean, here they are celibate, you know, mm-hmm. Forcing somebody that has a moral objection to gay marriage to force him to bake a cake. And you know, the lesbian mayor of Houston wanted to censor all the sermons of all the pastors. It's interesting what was going on in England. The king was sending spies into the churches and listening to their sermons. And if the pastor departed from the Anglican liturgy, he was arrested.
Wow.
Well, then you have another group that said, it's beyond hope of trying to purify. We're going to separate ourselves. And they did. And they would meet in barns and basements. They would get caught and tortured. They finally fled to Holland. We call them pilgrims. And after 12 years in Holland, they came to America. So we learned the lessons of freedom of conscience that they experienced. We're having to relearn today. Mm-hmm. So the kings really did not care if you had a warm, fuzzy feeling in your heart about God. They wanted outward compliance. It was in America where the founder said no. One of the Baptist founders, Roger Williams, they would say, if the king can stand there and answer for your conscience on the day of judgment, fine, believe whatever the king tells you. But if the king's not going to be there on the day of judgment, you have to answer to God for your own conscience. And so the idea of freedom of conscience was really an American Christian invention, so to speak, which can be traced back to the pilgrims.
That's awesome. So in your book, The Treacherous World of the 16th Century and How the Pilgrims Escaped It, it's really all of these interesting stories like how Islam led in the Dark Ages, how Islam led in the Renaissance.
Yeah, so the Muslims were attacking Greece and destroying churches, museums, libraries, artwork, and sort of like they're doing today, right? I mean, they mm-hmm. destroyed the grave of Jonah. They destroyed, you know, the pyramids in the 832 AD. A sultan in Egypt destroyed the pyramids and looted them. Back then, the Greek scholars were fleeing the Muslim invasion and taking all their Greek art and literature, and they were going to Florence, Italy. And so this flood of Greek stuff into Florence in the 1400s, we call the Renaissance. And then when the Muslims conquered Constantinople in the year 1453, it ended the land trade routes to get from Europe to India and China. And that's when Columbus set sail looking for a sea route. So Christopher Columbus would have never set sail had it not been for Islamic jihad cutting off the land routes to India and China. Anyway, so as the Muslims are invading into Greece, these Greek scholars are fleeing to Europe, and they're also fleeing with their Greek New Testaments. And so now Western scholars like Erasmus are translating the Bible not just to Latin, but all the way back to Greek. And this reinterest in the original meaning of these words in the New Testament sparked what we call the Reformation. Erasmus was friends with Martin Luther, right? And so we begin to see if it had not been for the Muslims destroying the civilization in the East, there would have been no movement. These Greek New Testaments would have stayed in the dusty old basements of these churches. But it was in that rush that they fled. Again, people forget that Egypt used to be Christian. It was evangelized by Mark that wrote the gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, until the Muslim leader Amir ibn Alas conquers it. Syria used to be completely Christian. The name Christian was first used in Syria. It was evangelized by the Apostle Paul. It was Christian until Caliph Umar conquered it. Jerusalem was completely Christian. When Constantine legalized Christianity, 313 AD, his mother, St. Helena, goes to Jerusalem and builds all these big cathedrals where, you know, she thought Christ's passion took place. Mm-hmm. Well, then the Muslims, Caliph Umar, conquered Jerusalem, and they began to level these churches and destroy them. And then there used to be 250 Catholic dioceses along North Africa in the 7th century. Morocco, Algiers, Tunisia, Libya. St. Augustine of Hippo was from Carthage. Today, that's Tunisia. But the Muslims conquered it all in 10 years. Why? The Christians had embraced something called pietism. And what's that? That was this thought that if you really become a Christian, you were expected to give away all your money and live in a cave.
Oh.
Or live as a bum.
Yeah.
Or join a monastery so we'll never see you again. Or the desert fathers, they would build a platform in the desert, climb on top, and bake in the sun, thinking that they're denying their flesh and getting holier. But it was all this me-focused salvation that abandoned, it withdrew from society. So in other words, the Christians didn't get involved in politics.
Yes.
And as a result, they didn't defend, and Islam swept through North Africa. And then they crossed the Strait of Gibraltar in the year 711. And the Europeans were still fighting on foot with heavy metal swords. Muslims were on horseback with stirrups and scimitar swords, these curved swords made of Damascus steel, very light, like a razor blade. And they literally could hold the reins of the horse in one hand, the scimitar sword in the other, and at a full gallop, they could slice someone in half. So in 10 years, the Muslim cavalry conquered all of Spain and carried away over a million into slavery. There were whole Catholic orders in Europe through the Middle Ages called the Trinitarians. And the head of the order was called the Ransomer. And they would collect alms and donations and go under a white flag to North Africa to get your friend back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the Muslims crossed the Pyrenees, conquered southern France, and they were finally stopped outside of Paris at the Battle of Tours in 732 AD, just 100 years after the death of Muhammad in 632 AD. So they go from Arabia to Paris in a 100-year military campaign. And since this is the first century of Islam, the Muslims that want to be like Muhammad and the rightly guided caliphs, they want to be militant. Just like Christians want to be like first century Christians, like Jesus and the apostles, and they were not militant, right? So it's a spectrum with Jesus on one side, Muhammad on the other. The closer you get to following Jesus, the more peaceful you are. The closer you get to following Muhammad, the more militant you are, right? Because he and the rightly guided caliphs were warriors and conquered from the Arabian deserts all the way up to Paris. Anyway, so we can see that as Islam begins to conquer civilization, begins to move further and further and further west and eventually spill over the ocean into America.
Wow. Well, you know, we often think that Islam is a relatively new religion, as religions go, but you're saying that they've had a profound impact on Earth's history for a long time.
Right. So the Pilgrims settled Massachusetts in 1620. In 1625, the Pilgrims had saved up 800 pounds of beaver skins and dried fish, and they put them on two boats to send them back to England for trade. And William Bradford writes in the History of the Plymouth Settlement that Edward Winslow and Miles Standish was on the big ship, and they were towing the smaller ship behind them, and then they let it loose when they were finally in the English Channel. But he says, then the Turkish man of war came up, captured the smaller ship, took it to Morocco, and sold the captain and the crew into slavery.
Wow.
And so the Sultan in Morocco was Moulay Ismail. And he had captured over 25,000 Europeans. We think of slaves, we think of Africans. These were white Europeans enslaved by this Muslim leader in Morocco. And he was brutal. He had African slaves too. And the history record was if he came out dressed in yellow that day, they knew someone was going to die that day. And he would hunt his own slaves. And he would go out and he'd bring two changes of clothes because he'd be hacking them and he'd get messed up and bloody. And so, I mean, he had like 500 wives that bore him 1,042 children. It's like some record as to a number of kids that one person had. And he had him build his big palace at Mequinez. He wanted them all to hammer at the same time. And if the Christian slaves didn't hammer all together at the same time, he'd have his soldiers kick him off the wall and they'd die. Brutal guy.
Wow.
So the Muslim pirates of North Africa not just captured that pilgrim ship, but they captured over 1,000 Englishmen in the year 1625 alone. From the little islands, they would raid them, the coast, and then they went over to Ireland. And there's the stolen village of Baltimore, Ireland, where the Muslims come up and attack and kill and round up the whole town, put them on ships, send them to Morocco and sell them into slavery. And then they go over and attack Iceland. So around 1640, they carry away over 400 people from Reykjavik, Iceland, and take them to Morocco and sell them into slavery.
Wow.
And so the situation that we're facing today, the Pilgrims had to face this situation. So by reading these stories, it sort of gives a perspective.
Yes,
right? So
yes.
It's called The Treacherous World of the 16th Century and How the Pilgrims Escaped It.
Let's see. We had gotten down through some of the Persian Shahs.
Yeah, that was sort of interesting. So the first company ever was the Company of Adventurer Merchants. of England. Okay, a little background. Middle Ages, there were no companies. If you wanted to do some big endeavor, like sail around the world to the Spice Islands in Indonesia for, you know, for trade, you had to hit up some rich guy or some king to underwrite your trip. So there were no companies, and it was considered a sin to pay or receive interest. It was the sin of usury. When the Reformation happened, then you had the first company in England of merchant adventurers, right? And they were going to go, believe it or not, north of Russia over to the Far East. They think, hey, it's a round world. This will get over. They didn't realize there'd be ice. And they had three ships. Two of them froze in the middle of the ocean, just packed in ice, and every single person on board froze to death. One of them froze in the water, but it was close enough to the land that some Russians on dog sleds go out there and rescue him and bring him back, and then bring him to Ivan the Terrible. And he was the guy who sort of unified Russia, but he did it by wiping out Novgorod, which was a republic in Russia. And so they changed the name of the company to the Muscovy Company, because they're now trading with Moscow. And so that's around 1554. But then the Dutch start a company, the Dutch East India Company. And it becomes the most prosperous company, more than all the others combined, for over 200 years. They have a monopoly on trade with Japan, and they're going to Indonesia, Jakarta, and Goa, India, and South Africa, these Dutch, right? A company was rich guys pool their money, and the king didn't have to spend anything. He just got a percentage of what came in. So it was no risk to him, and he made money off it. The rich guys took all the risk. Well, the Dutch did something different. They didn't just have rich guys. They made it so that a blacksmith, a cook, you know, a farmer, anybody could invest a little money in this joint stock company. They'd invest money in a boat going to Indonesia. When the boat came back filled full of spices, they would get paid a profit. If you wanted to sell your piece of ownership in the boat while it was at sea, you would go down to the Amsterdam Stock Exchange. Wow. They invented the stock exchange. And if your boat sank, the Dutch invented insurance companies. You got insurance companies that went all the way back to the Dutch. Of course, the Dutch settled New Amsterdam, and they traded their joint stocks along the wall. But in 1664, the British took it over and turned it into New York, and turned into Wall Street, right? So here we are in America, where any person can invest money in some company, some endeavor, and they get paid a profit. That goes back to the Dutch, and it goes back to the 16th century.
Amazing.
And anyway, so you had the British followed up with the British East India Company, and then you had the Dutch had a West India Company, and then finally the British had the Virginia Company, and now we're talking about the settling of America.
So you can see where, you know, the economics played a huge role, the ideology of religion. So what other things played a role in where we are today in America, or where we are today in the world?
Well, I thought this was interesting. So those British that went to Ivan the Terrible, they decided they would go south of Russia to Persia, Iran. And they meet the Shah of Iran. And the Shah's like, oh, cool, we got some English people. Never seen them before. And what do? They help upgrade the Persian military. Now, who was the enemy of the Persian Empire? The Ottoman Empire. And so now the Persians are attacking the Ottoman Empire from one side, and the Spanish are attacking the Ottoman Empire from the other side. But that's sort of a unique thing. And so one of these Persian guys travels with these British guys and goes around Europe. And those two brothers, they were the Shirley brothers. And so this Persian guy traveling converts and becomes a Christian.
Wow.
And so he goes to Spain and all these different courts across Europe. But that's interesting. But then, while I'm on the subject, you had King of France was Francis the First. And he gets captured by the King of Spain, Charles the Fifth. Europe at this time is a bunch of families, and they're all related to each other somehow through marriage.
Yes.
You know? So it's all like a big soap opera. Anyway, Francis the First is captured, the King of France, and he says, I lost all save honor. I mean, and so the King of Spain says, look, I want you to sign over a bunch of these little areas and islands and ports to Spain, then I'll let you go. Well, he lets him go, but what does Francis the First do? He decides he's going to make a treaty with Spain's biggest enemy, the Ottoman Empire. So from Francis I on, you had the country of France teaming up with the Muslim Ottoman Empire.
Wow.
Anyway, so now Spain is split, and they have to not just fight France, but they got to fight the Ottomans. And so this emboldens the Ottoman Empire, so they conquer Hungary. And they kill the king of Hungary, King Louis, right? And ever. So some of the allegiances that we see going on today, right? Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Iran, some of those things trace themselves all the way back to the 16th century.
It's amazing. I'm sitting here trying to think if there is any other thing that motivates besides economics and ideology.
Those were the big things, the financial. So the Europeans traded with India and China across the China Silk Road, the Gobi Desert, and they would have their camels and donkeys, and they would, you know, go on these caravans across the desert, and then they would bring back stuff. And then the Muslims began to raid and attack the caravans. But you had in China, Kublai Khan was the emperor, and a guy named Marco Polo leaves Venice, Italy in 1271 and makes his way all the way over to China. And he's over there for like 24 years. And he works for Kublai Khan as an emissary, an ambassador. And he finally goes back to Europe and he tells them stuff. He's actually in prison because Genoa and Venice got into a war, and he's reciting to his cellmate all these things, and the cellmate's writing it all down. And it becomes the bestseller in Europe. Now, this is 2 centuries before they invent the printing press, so it's all handwritten copies.
Oh, wow.
And nobody could believe it, so they called it Il Milione's, or the Million Lies. They thought it was like a Paul Bunyan mm-hmm. type of thing. Anyway, so in his stories, Marco Polo talks about China having invented the wheelbarrow, the compass, the Pony Express, the piñata. The Chinese invented thread from worms, silkworms. And the Chinese invented plates made out of China. We call it China because that's where it came from. And the Chinese invented gunpowder. And then the Chinese invented paper from tree pulp rather than from Egyptian papyrus reeds. So tree pulp was a new thing. And what did the Chinese print with their paper? Currency. The first paper currency in the world was during the Yuan Dynasty under Kublai Khan. And so China was technologically superior to Europe. And then India had teas, dyes, and spices. The blue dye called indigo came mm-hmm. from India.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a big thing. That's why the British, you know, they were all, have all their blue stuff, because this was like, oh, really expensive, rare dye, the blue dye. And but when the Muslims conquered Central Asia, it cut off the land routes. And that's when Columbus set sail looking for a sea route. So Columbus would have never set sail over here had it not been for the Muslims conquering the routes. The Muslims had attackers on the caravans, and they were called thugs. That's where the word came from. And what would they do? They would see a caravan, and one of the thugs would join up with the caravan. And the people in the caravan would look at this guy like, who is this guy? You know, and for a couple of days, they'd all be eyeing him like, you know, sort of strange. But after a while, they say, okay, I guess he's not a threat, and they would sort of relax. And then another stranger would join their caravan, and they'd be like, well, who's that guy? And they'd be sort of skeptical for a while, but after a couple of days, he just started to ride along, and they get used to him. And another one, until pretty soon there's a whole flock of them. And then they would be camped out in some very remote area. The thugs would like make a loud noise, and one of them would like point up at the stars, and everybody would look up, and another one would sneak up behind, take his bandana, and strangle one of the guys. And the other ones wouldn't see. And then they'd do it again. And then they would bury all the bodies so no other caravans would notice all this. And then they would rob the entire thing.
We've come to the end of our show, but I know I'm going to have you on again soon. And I don't want to give all the information away. I have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Education Currents, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.